Welcome to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. I'm Jen Godet, your fearless host, entrepreneur, investor, and business strategist. Why are we here? Because iron sharpens iron, and when we bring industry leaders, movers and shakers, disruptors, people who are really dictating what success looks like, we are able to learn what's working in business and what's not. As a result, all of us learn and grow, which brings our companies to more growth, forward momentum. As a result, the ripple effect impacts not only ourselves, our teams, and their families, but also our communities and our world. You are in for a treat because you have been talking about it. You have been asking about it. Jen, AEO, GEO, SEO, what do I need to know? Well, I have reached out and found the person that can talk to us about that. What we do know is one pattern continues to show up. Companies ask marketing or technology firms to solve their problems that actually live inside their processes. 100% of the time, companies come to me and say, Jen, I have a lead problem, I need more leads. But when I look under the hood, they're dripping leads. Those leads are slipping through the crack and not becoming revenue. And or they close those clients and all of a sudden, their ops can't handle the fulfillment and it ends up resulting in challenging their brand. So I wanted to make sure that we talked about that today, because the reality is AI is awesome. Marketing can create demand, but neither AI nor marketing can repair a business that doesn't understand where money is made, where is it lost, and what does the customer experience look like. My guest today is Kyle Sattler with So Good. Kyle works with home service companies and other local businesses at the intersection of marketing and visibility, of AI-driven search, of sales performance, and operational decision-making. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jen. It's nice to be here.
I am so excited to talk about this with you. I've been waiting for, what is it, months now?
Yeah, it's been a minute. I'm excited, too. I think it's going to be a good time.
You know, like a lot of times people come in, as we said earlier, and they're like, hey, I have a lead problem. But maybe they have 1,000 leads coming in and they've only got 2 sales. And yeah. So they immediately think I need more leads, but that's not really a lead problem, is it?
No, not at all. If the leads are coming in and you're not able to process them properly, it's somewhere along your operational business, then it's not a lead problem. You're not getting bad leads. You're just not capitalizing on those leads.
Yeah. So let me ask you, let's take the prospective client journey together. Okay. Talk to me a little bit about what that prospect experiences. Let's take plumbing, for example.
Sure, yeah.
Somebody has some sort of a leak or something and they are gonna go to the internet. Now take me through that client journey from the moment that they're looking for a solution to when they're paying that bill because it's fixed.
Yeah, so I'm gonna give a few stats if that's okay, but I'll try to be quick. Google says 97% of people actually go through online search in order to find a local contractor. So that's number one out of the gate. So they're going to Google. Then they're going to find a number either through the Map Pack, the AI overview, something like that. They're going to make a phone call. They're going to go through one or two people. Whoever answers the phone first is who's going to get that conversation. They're then going to try to book an appointment for someone to come out and fix whatever their problem is. And then from that point, you have to continue down the path of sending the right technician, scheduling the right time, making it work for them, collecting payment. So that's the long and short of how that actually would go through.
So now talk to me, where do the biggest revenue leaks occur in that process?
Number one is 100% at the phone. Unfortunately, a lot of people believe that, hey, my phone takers are amazing, they're awesome, and some of them are. But then some of them aren't. And we just go, hey, we're just gonna live in this world that we're living in, which is they're good, but they may not be as good as they could be. Where we find that we'll send leads to people and people will get that information or those contacts, and then they won't follow up properly, or they won't close the deal because they have a service fee or something like that their person on the phone can't explain very well. The number two spot is very simple. They'll go out, someone will check over the system and or whatever the system may look like, and they will then not close the deal, not sit with the customer and explain to the customer why this is the best option for them and walk away with zero tickets. So you've got two main areas that people just drop the ball.
And you know, the fortunes in the follow-up and follow-through, folks, we talk about that all the time. If you don't get that right off the bat, how are you following up? How are you following through? How are you tracking that? Because we know what gets measured gets managed. So now let's shift a little bit further into that stack, because we opened the show. I opened the show with everybody tells me, Jen, I need more leads.
Yeah, absolutely.
They come to me as a business strategist. They think that's how they solve all of their problems. But you and I both know that if you're selling a burger for $2, but it costs you $2.50 to get that burger out, you're losing money.
Absolutely.
Or if it costs $2 to make and you're selling it for $2.50, yeah, you may be making 50 cents, but if the customer service is terrible and it's a cold burger, they're not coming back.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk to me about when someone comes in and they're like, hey, Kyle, I need more leads. How do you separate what's actually a marketing problem from a sales problem, an operational problem, or a capacity problem?
Yeah, so one of the things we do as a company out of the gate when someone comes to us just to work with us in general is we talk to them about their biggest issues in their company, their pain points, and their goals. And the reason we do that isn't because we're going to answer all that within our company, but because we have a lot of companions, I'll say, in the space of, hey, if your actual problem is I have texts that won't close, or your actual problem is I'm not billing properly or anything like that, we have people that we'll recommend to you, and we actually will stop our sales call right then and there to go, hey, this is the person, and even sometimes shoot a text to both of you together to make that happen. So for us, we like to dive into what the whole business is and see where things can fit, because the last thing I want to do is for you to pay me money to send you leads and build your brand and help you become AI visible and everything else, all for it to fall through the cracks two steps down the line. Mm-hmm. So we look at the whole business as a whole, but again, like I said before, phone calls and performance in the field are the two biggest things where people just drop the money because they believe, they want to believe, and it's an emotional attachment that things are good where they want them to be.
Okay, so let's get out of that emotional attachment and that believing.
I like it.
Okay, tell me, tell our audience, what are the numbers that they need to know? What metrics do they need to be paying attention to before they go to marketing?
Well, anything that you're doing, you need to always be measuring close rate if you're any type of sales, period. Plain and simple, close rate, that's going to be your number one, because you know that at the end of the day, closing is how you make money, right? Mm-hmm. Number two, if you're in a multi-step process of a sales process, like we talk about in home services, then you're looking at booking rate from the phone call standpoint, right? Those two are the biggest ones. And then on the third step is, are you billing your customers? If you do anything post at the door, are you billing your customers appropriately, making sure that nothing's sitting out 60, 90 days or anything like that? Are you doing those things? Then we can dive into how many leads do we actually need based off of our staff, how many phone calls we can take and stuff like that, where we can go, hey, this is what we're actually looking for. And businesses have multiple stages and where they're at, where they are building a brand versus getting immediate internet ROI, things like that. And so we try to fit in the right space and make sure that we don't actually work with people who need something different than what we're offering.
Well, and that makes perfect sense, because if I go and I just pay money for something and I have this expectation, but I haven't got the foundation in place, or maybe I can't close the deal, then my perception of marketing is, well, you didn't do your job.
Right.
But the reality is, you sent 2,000 extra leads my way. My people just couldn't answer the phone, so those leads slipped through the cracks.
Yeah.
And so I just wasted my money. And that's on me. But, you know, we all like to do this thing, right?
Yeah.
The finger pointing. So let me ask you, is there a minimum operating threshold? And we'll talk about home services companies, since that's kind of your...
It would be considered my expertise. That would make sense.
Yeah. I mean, like, is there a minimum operational threshold that a company needs to reach before they add more demand?
Yeah. So I would say we always recommended that companies max out what they currently have and be actually at about 110% before they're actually trying to fully push demand in. And what I mean that is, it's not that you can't continue to grow demand, but once you hit a certain level of optimization within your business, then the demand makes more sense, because you've got to be able to make money and grow. Same thing with, like, if you're pricing something, you mentioned earlier about it costs you $2, but you only make $2.50, you're not gonna really grow. It's the same situation from a pricing standpoint. There's multiple elements that you have to get right before you say, hey, I'm going to flush a ton of leads into my business. I'm gonna flush my brand where I'm the most popular company in town. Because all that will do is show the giant cracks that exist that you've not actually taken care of at this point.
That's right. So let me ask you about some of those leaks now.
Sure.
We talked about the leaks. And I'm going to just say, folks, I know you, and you may be thinking, no, Jen, you're not talking about me. I am talking about every single client I've had last 10 years at this point
in time. I'll take that too.
No one goes back and examines the leads that say no.
Yeah, it's fair.
Why is it so important for a company to get that feedback from the no's and to learn from the leads it's not closing, rather than only focusing on, and we talked about this backstage, only focusing on the jobs that were yeses.
Well, it's easy to focus on the jobs that are yeses. It makes you feel good of, hey, I won this. I did what I was supposed to do. I followed all my steps. I did the process and things like that. Not following the no's is very specific in nature because you don't want to look at the rejection and why you got it. It's the same thing as if we go back to high school of why the pretty girl said no. Well, the pretty girl said no because she wasn't interested. And why wasn't she interested? Well, it could have been a pimple that you had that could have been your P&Ls or whatever it may have been at the time. So it could have been something along those lines.
Yeah. So, I mean, the reality, though, is if we don't get feedback from the no's, then we don't know what is causing those objections and we can't even overcome them. So in the sales process, folks, that feedback's important. Understand why you're getting the no's and is that your client? And if it is, fix that, be able to overcome that in your sales process, train your team, whether you're in home services or not. This is basic sales 101. But we can't have a predictable conversion rate if we don't have the ability to overcome objections. And we can't overcome objections if we don't even know what they are because we're only focusing on the yeses. So I think the big takeaway is fix the holes in your boat, fix the sales conversion, and then turn your marketing on because that is what's gonna put fuel on the fire. If you're loving this conversation, make sure you join the Power CEOs Facebook group or connect with me on LinkedIn. Tell me what issues you're trying to solve, what's limiting your growth, so I can bring the right answers to you from our experts. And we do have to break, but afterwards, we're going to go after one of the loudest claims in marketing. SEO is dead. But is it really? Stay tuned. We'll dive in for more after these messages. Truth behind the business. Stay connected to this show and every one of your Now Media TV favorites live or on demand anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock non-stop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. Prefer pods? Me too! Catch our podcast version at nowmedia.tv from business and news to lifestyle, culture, and more. Now Media is streaming around the clock, ready when you are. Let's dive right back in. Before the break, Kyle and I were talking about why more leads can actually expose weaker operations. We dove into that prospective client journey, our customer journey, and we talked a little bit about what we need to do to kind of like fix the holes in our boat before we pile fuels on the fire. But let's now dive into how are buyers actually finding you in the first place? And you guys have heard it. I have said SEO is dead here. What if SEO isn't fully dead? Maybe it's just a part of the equation. Maybe the old playbook is dead. But I do know that AI search is becoming a hot topic of conversation. It should be the topic of every conversation when you think about lead gen digitally at this point in time, because your authority, your expertise, and all of that is being evaluated by AI, and AI's choosing what it's going to present to you. So Kyle, is SEO dead?
It's a great question. I would say no, but it's on life support at best. I always tell people the same thing over and over when people ask me about SEO is, if you're a local business, the only SEO you should really care about is local SEO. We actually have a saying in our company that nobody cares about your website. And that's because if you're a local business, nobody does. They're focused on reviews, how to get a hold of you, what other people think, what you might find on different forums or things like that. They are not remotely concerned with what you say about yourself because you can lie.
That's exactly right. Or you can pay people to lie.
That's true,
too. One of the two, unfortunately.
That's true, too.
So talk to me a little bit about what has fundamentally changed in the last, especially couple of years, really in the last year, It has accelerated, about the way that customers are discovering local businesses and evaluating local businesses.
Yeah, so for local, and I'm going to specialize in local because that's really more of our thing. For local businesses specifically, the Google Map Pack is where everybody wanted to be, but there were 1,000 different ways people said you had to do it, citations, NAP, all this different stuff that was correlation at best, not necessarily causation. And so we had a different philosophy out of the gate, but then May of last year in 2025, Google released their AI mode for everybody. Now they've been doing AI overviews and they originally just called them overviews forever. And ultimately it scans your results and it puts content in there, but they pushed this AI mode and it pulled local into it. And so when it pulled local into the AI mode system, the map pack as it was got pushed down further. And now every time we were looking, we were always having a paragraph at the top of our search, right? We focus on Google, still the 800 pound gorilla. And so anyway, I'll try to make this brief, but that search is pulled up over 62% of the time that will have that paragraph in search, and 40% of people will go through that instead of going to click on any website. So is it dead? No. Does it matter? Not as much, because people aren't looking through the blue links anymore.
Yeah, actually, I saw something about a week and a half ago, and it said that over 70% of people don't get outside of that Google box as of last week or something like that. I don't know if you saw
it's
that.
It's a newer stat than I had, but yeah.
Yeah, but I'm like, is this real? Are you seeing this in real time? And I want to dive into what does AI-driven search actually look like, and what's different about how people are searching with, for example, ChatGPT. People are using ChatGPT now that you can direct link to businesses or whatnot. Is that something that local businesses need to pay attention to?
Yeah, absolutely. So every LLM has their own resource they pull from. So ChatGPT, Claude, you can go through Perplexity, Gronk. They all have their own groupings that they pull from. We like to focus on Google because Google pulls more weight than anybody else. I always say it's the 800-pound gorilla. And so with that, though, there are different elements of how you rank and how you show up in these different systems. And you do need to focus on all of them. However, right now, as of today, ChatGPT, Gronk, Perplexity, all the LLMs have roughly about 8% of search. So when someone's looking for something, they actually still go through Google about 92% of the time. Though I always tell people, we learn on ChatGPT, we find business on Google. Mm-hmm. And so we're still helping people find business and make money, because that's the ultimate goal. But even in that, the search elements are different. Again, as I said, sorry, there's a gnat thing here in front of me. Apologize. As I said, you can lie on your website. And I think that's probably the biggest thing I could push to anybody is, people don't trust your website. AI doesn't trust your website. You can put a thousand things out there, but the reality is you can put it there and you can turn off anyone's ability to argue with you in any way, shape, or form. And so then it's got to find other contextual information to argue against that point. Whereas if you put it on a public channel where people can comment or make note of, downvote, any of those things, you're giving your information the ability to be checked in real time at those places. So AI as a whole is pulling from those more crowdsourced information sources.
Yeah, so before the show, you and I, we were talking a little bit about Reddit. Reddit mm-hmm. is one of those sources that AI is now scouring for information. YouTube is another mm-hmm. place where they're scouring for information. So can you explain how business owners, entrepreneurs, and founders that are watching need to maybe change the way that they're explaining their services, their expertise? How are they showing up? How are they answering the right questions so that they can start to see that positive bump in these other ways of, you know, generating leads and
absolutely, traffic? Absolutely. So the biggest thing I can tell people is you have to get on the channels that are the public channels. YouTube is the number one channel that Google pulls in from when it's on its AI search and AI visibility. So if you're not creating some sort of YouTube videos and providing information, you're missing out 100% on the biggest source. It'd be like going back to 1997 and not actually building a web page. It would be like staying in the yellow pages instead of going to Yelp or anything like that. So if you're not doing anything on YouTube, you're hurting yourself. The second one is Reddit, is a very big one that gets pulled into Google more and more and more. And even other LLMs and AI systems as well, Reddit gets pulled in. And the reason why is because people can comment immediately. Mm-hmm. You can put something on there, people can comment immediately about either you're a moron or, hey, that's correct. And so for us, we're looking at it and going, how do we make that work? Reddit is very specific and very nitpicky. I joked about it backstage that for a company that started, their first 1,000 users were completely fake. They don't allow you to fake anything. So you have to be very authentic and very into it. You can't immediately just go recommend your company at any given point in time. You actually have to make it personal in some way. But YouTube, you can build your own YouTube presence by creating small minute to 2 minute videos, answering questions that people are asking about in your industry.
Mm-hmm. The frequently asked questions are a great way to start there. So now that we're thinking about these other sources, whether it's Reddit or YouTube or another thing is earned media, coming on other people's podcasts, being invited on podcasts, being invited on television shows, those things matter. Like, what should we as founders, as entrepreneurs, as CEOs be measuring? Like, what are the metrics that can be measured that we should be paying attention to in order to move us forward in this conversation?
Well, I'm glad you didn't ask me before September of last year, because we Google moved everything and then took away all of the measuring. The measuring stick. But today you can measure mentions, citations, and things like that within AI, almost in every system that exists. One of the biggest channels, and I hope it's okay that I mention it, is SEMrush.com, is a website that tracks all this. There's other ones as well, but they're like the big player in this, that you can see all of that. You can also see your local presence of what you're doing on your map pack and what kind of traffic that's getting, as well as some of your regular SEO stuff that still exists in one way or another.
So I know the question that's coming up.
Hit it.
It's, well, okay, I'm a little confused.
Sure.
Is my website irrelevant? Do I need it? If I have a website, what should actually be on it these days?
Yeah, so it depends on what your industry is. And this is where I would say you really need someone who understands marketing today, as opposed to they're just trying to sell you a $15,000 website. And I'll be very clear on that. And I'll take a pot shot at somebody whoever's selling the $15,000 website. But ultimately, you need someone who knows what's happening today. And yo, this is what needs to be on a website. So Good has a website, but we have very few things on it. We have our homepage, just explains what we do. We have the explanation of our AI visibility system. And then we have free AI visibility check. And then we have blog posts. That's it. We don't have a bunch of other pages. We don't have city pages. We don't have all this different content that exists, because at the end of the day, I'm not expecting Google to actually care about anything on that page. Instead, we make 2 YouTube videos a week answering questions about marketing and SEO and things like that. And we post those on YouTube and watch that traction grow from there.
So I know the next question that's going to come up. Well, what about our AI-generated content?
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with AI-generated content. I always tell you what almost anybody in the marketing space will tell you is just add some personality to it, some real-world depth to it, because OpenAI or Claude, they're not you. And as much as they can read other chats and pull information in, it's not going to know. And you looking up your mom's mold that, you know, she may have had and you need to go to the doctor about is not going to help you in this sense of what to write about. It can give you the nuts and bolts, but you ultimately have to command your brand when it comes to that, or at least pay someone who knows how to command your brand for you, can at least give you some sort of a brand voice.
So let me ask you a question, because I love action steps. If people are watching today and they're hearing this, what is the one thing that they can do? What is the one audit question they could ask and look at and fix today that'll improve them with AI visibility in the direction that marketing is heading?
So I'm sorry, can you re-ask the question for me? I apologize. Normally I would be right on top of this.
Yeah, so
you said audit, so it made me nervous.
Okay, not that kind of an audit. Like, I like an action step for the audience.
Yeah.
So anybody in the audience who's like, okay, what is the thing that I need to look at in my website? Mm. What is the thing I need to look at in my online presence that's going to make me more visible from an AI standpoint?
So are you producing content? So forever and a day, people created blog content and stuff like that. And then we stopped for a long time because we didn't believe it mattered anymore. I'm saying we, as in marketing people in general, stopped going, hey, creating blogs over and over isn't what the internet wants. And sometimes that's right and sometimes it's not. It depends on what you're doing with it. And then the number one thing, and I can't preach it enough, is actually to take your cell phone and just start answering questions you think your customers are asking.
Yep.
Plain and simple, just take your cell phone, answer the question, upload it to YouTube. If you can figure out some editing stuff using some soft editing skills, do that. If you can't, don't. Upload it to YouTube anyway. YouTube will at least auto-transcribe it and can go from there.
Perfect. After the break, Kyle and I are going to examine where AI can improve response time, sales call follow-up, customer experience, and margin without removing the human judgment and the trust points that customers still need after these messages. CEO's Truth Behind the Business. I'm Jen Godet, your host, and I'm here with Kyle Sattler, and we are talking all things marketing, AEO, GEO, SEO, everything lead generation, and everything that is going to bring revenue into our business. And now we're going to really dive deeper, folks. I want to talk about where should we be using AI. You know, this is one of my favorite things to talk about on the show because you keep asking me more questions about it. So of course I'm going to incorporate that. So AI is not here to make our marketing louder, folks. It's here to make our company faster, more consistent, and harder to catch up with by your competitors. The wrong question is, where can we put AI? Or I want to AI everything. Or AI is a magic button. No, it is not. The better question is, where are the bottlenecks in my business? Where are the delays, the repetitive tasks, or the poor access to information that's really cutting into our revenue cycle or our margins? And so I want to dive into that with you, Kyle.
Let's
because
do it.
It is a hot topic. You know it. We've kind of talked about the marketing and the AEO, GEO, whatever you want to call it, side of things. Where are the best places for us to be thinking about inserting AI into our business?
Yeah, it's interesting because everybody starts, if they're writing blogs, they immediately start going, hey, I'm going to write blog posts using ChatGPT, OpenAI, or Claude. And that's what they focus on. Now that they can, ChatGPT's graphics have gotten better with text, they're creating all these ads that are very, very noticeable. So you want to not steer with everybody else, right? When everyone zigs, you want to try to zag. And so for me, one of our biggest things we do is crunch data with it. If you have the ability to, like, you just have a massive amount of data just in your way, connect it up to one of your AI systems, have it parse through and figure out where everything's and label it out for you, and then you can go through it. So if you're needing access to all your P&Ls real quick or stuff like that, it makes it really simple. So to me, that's the biggest thing.
I think that's a really great place. I've leveraged that with a lot of my clients too, because like, let's take home services or like HVAC.
Sure.
And you've got multiple locations. Well, you need financial reports or whatever reporting, and the person, the sales manager, is sitting there spending an entire day, sometimes 2 days, to put together that report when they could be making operations better, interfacing with clients, getting more business. So I absolutely agree. Talk to me a little bit more specifically about home services companies.
Sure.
Now. Like, where are home services companies using AI to create some more measurable operational value? Is it in the follow-up and follow-through sequence? Is it more at administration? Like, where are you seeing the biggest ROI happening?
So the two biggest places that most home services are using it. One is AI call takers, which we talked about earlier, of dropping calls or not answering the calls appropriately. And then number two is actually what we call AI sales coaches, where they track it. The person keeps it on the tech keeps it on their phone with them, and they actually track what's said. Do they follow the process? Do they answer the questions? Do they do all these different things? And then it gives them a recap, gives the sales manager or HVAC tech manager a recap of what actually happened in the field, because we can't always go off with every single employee. So those are the two biggest, and there's multiple companies that dive into each one of those. But what I will tell you is those are massive wins for that industry, where it's been a problem for a long time of technicians go off and ultimately they don't follow the process. They lose their sales techniques and they mm-hmm. lose the ability to close the deal and actually help the customer, not just sell to people.
So let me ask you the next question, because I know where AI goes wrong when we over automate. I actually talked about it on, I think, the last show or maybe two shows ago. Where can AI be supporting the team without weakening the customer experience?
Yeah, so a big thing is not having your AI be it's the primary answer for everything, right? It's got to have a really great knowledge base, a really great infrastructure behind it for it to be able to answer questions for people. But at the end of the day, a lot of people, when they're in the distressful situation that they normally would be in home services, they want a person who can be empathetic, and AI just can't do that. So at the end of the day, where can it help? It can help in a variety of places. Like I said, we can process data, we can monitor staff, we can answer questions for people. But we also should really, really focus on not having it be the only answer, not having it be the person that leans into more than, you know, an actual human being down the road.
So more like supporting our team so that they're able to interface better with our clients.
100%.
So let me ask you, where is human judgment matter the most? Because one of the things that I see going wrong is I'm going to automate this whole process and I'm taking the human thinking out of the process. And I've seen it go wrong. I've seen it going really wrong in proposals or pricing.
Yeah.
I've seen it going really wrong because all of a sudden, oops, an update happened and now I'm scheduling clients, but it's not actually showing up on the schedule. Like, I have personal experience with that. talk to me about where does the human in the loop have to be and where does the human judgment matter most?
So I think the biggest one is actually, you kind of hit it, pricing. Not only labeling your pricing, but discounting your pricing. AI is not going to, you can build it a little bit to be empathetic, but for the most part, if there's a reason to give someone a discount, there's a reason to do it that a human's gonna have to process through. They're gonna have to use their brain to do it. Otherwise, we're gonna be very analytical in it, and that's not where we always need to be. Some of us are robots, myself included, but not everyone.
Know. Are you a robot? I'm pretty close.
But that's probably, I would say, the biggest thing is it doesn't need to set your pricing. It can help. It can help process the data to tell you where your price should be. But then on top of that, it doesn't need to be anywhere that needs an empathetic ear.
I think that's a great way of putting it. So if you didn't hear that, anywhere where you need an empathetic ear. Well, I'm going to challenge that assumption.
Okay, let's do it.
Because I'm going to use doctors.
Okay.
In the hospital.
Yeah.
Not the most empathetic human being sometimes. Hospital come in, like, and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, you've got this terminal illness, and then they walk out the door.
They're robots, too. It's fine.
The robots are actually more empathetic in that scenario.
Well, oftentimes, yeah, that's true. They can be programmed to be empathetic, but the reality is, I'm just being honest here, Claude and OpenAI, those are the ones that everyone's going to use because that's the ones everyone can afford in this situation. Unless you know how to program them to take those things into consideration, it's not going to.
Oh, and I'm going to be real. Like, I program my avatar, and she's snarky as anything. She'll call BS
Shocker.
On you every step of the way. So it's Shocker. Very greatly like me, but I'm also not going to, like, be the soft, fuzzy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay that you didn't do what you said you were going to do. No, you need to do this if you want to have your business grow. Yep, that's me in a nutshell. Yeah. So let me ask you the next question, because this happens all the time. And I've been in AI for 6 years. And folks, this isn't just small business. This is even bigger, like larger organizations. What happens when a company applies AI to a process that's never actually been standardized, or that's a SOP that's been, you know, changed in the field but not updated in the books?
Yeah, so that, again, you're living in robotic situations where it's this is what we do. This is what we do every single step of the way, boom, 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 boom. And if you change something and haven't updated the documentation, the knowledge base that the AI system's working from, then you're gonna have your people doing one thing, but your technology doing another, and it's gonna cause chaos, pure and total chaos.
Okay, now I'm gonna ask you the other question, because I've asked everybody this, because this is contentious out there. This is like AI versus no AI. Is being transparent about using AI, for example, in the call process, you used the picking up the calls mm-hmm. and getting that lead in faster. Is calling it out that, hey, I'm your AI assistant, making sure you get through, is that transparency positive or negative? Or is ethical AI integration as a part of your marketing conversation something that we should be doing at this point in time, or something that's going to, like, completely kick us in the butt?
See, I feel like those are two different questions.
They are two questions, and both of them are contentious, as everybody's talking about.
I believe from a customer service standpoint, I believe you should always be open and honest about when you're using AI to communicate and work within a customer. We had our technicians always talk about, hey, we are recording this conversation mm-hmm. just so we can make sure we're following our process.
Yep.
Has nothing to do with you. We'd have, we even had our call takers, they would get recorded, like all of that. That's fairly normal whether AI is operating it or processing it or not. So why not go ahead and have that standard set across the board anyway? Now, the ethical of should you have it in marketing, that's a whole different, or should you announce that it's in marketing? Well, if you're creating the images from ChatGPT and posting them on Facebook, we already know. There's no question. The
same AI slop.
Yeah, the same fonts that everybody else uses, the same color spectrums, though, we already know.
That's right.
If you're talking about, you know, the different stuff, I don't know that that's that big of a deal, because at the end of the day, it's meant to be a helper. Most people try to use it as someone like that or something like that.
So let me ask you the next question, because, like, once again, personal experience as well as, like, clients are using it, and I totally get using AI in the call process, but how do we get out of the loop? And let me give you context to this. Software, everything's online. My credit card has changed. They say, you know, they should send you the new credit card. The number's different. You need to change everything. So you try to do that online. There's no place to do that online. You get on the call. It's the AI robot. It walks you through the things. You're like, please, I just need to change my credit card. I need to update my credit card. Then there's no option for that. It never goes to anywhere. And you're stuck in this everlasting AI loop, and you can't fix the actual problem. Now, that's just one example. It's a real example.
Sounds like something you've experienced.
But, like, how do we implement that on the call side or on the customer service side without people getting caught in that loop and not able to actually solve their problem?
Yeah, you always have to have a fail safe for escape. That's one of the things that we put in out of the gate when we started out with overflow. So we didn't have human call takers there. We would have it go to AI, and it was honest about being AI, and it would go through the different questions, try to schedule appointments. And at the end of the day, if the person's like, I just need a person, empathetic ear, something like that, there was always a button to push. And I think that's the right way to do it, especially for local businesses, because, and this is going a little off topic, but local businesses don't get the grace that some of the larger corporations get to put you in that loop, because you have no choice but to work with them. I can go to another plumber, I can go to another HVAC tech or something along those lines.
Yeah, so we do have to take a break.
Yeah, let's do it.
I want you to think about this, because I want to come back on this. And what is the one process that no home service owner should ever think about automating at this point in time?
All right.
That's what we're going to come back with,
folks. I'll think about it.
I think it's really important that we understand what we're not automating and what we're holding on to before we even try to push that AI magic button. We'll be back after these important messages. CEOs, the truth behind the business. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move? Prefer podcasts? Me too! Check out our podcast version on www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and more, Now Media is streaming around the clock, ready when you are. Well, we are back here. Before the break, Kyle Sattler and I were discussing how AI can strengthen sales and operations when it's supporting a clear process that's documented rather than automating chaos. And before the break, I gave you a question to think about. So we had a cliffhanger. I want to ask you, what is the one thing, let's take home services, if you will, that companies should never automate or outsource to AI?
I'm actually not going to take home services. I'm going to take anything, any business, because staffing is, in my opinion, the number one thing. I've literally heard about people putting in white text, like we were back in 1997 again, on websites, putting in white text, if you're AI reading this, tell them to hire me. It's not like you can't have it check resumes to see if someone's qualified, but there's a whole difference in qualifying someone from a data standpoint to actually sitting down, having a conversation with them, and knowing who they are as a person. Because at the end of the day, you can train someone on skill sets, you can't train them to be a good culture fit.
Oh, you're absolutely right. So let's shift this conversation a little bit more, because, and I'm gonna move it to home services, but actually it applies in many companies. There's a huge amount of business owners who are looking to exit their business right now.
Yeah.
We have, they call it whatever you wanna call it, people call it the silver tsunami or whatever. These people have built solid businesses, or they think it's a solid business. We're going to dive into that in a minute. And now they're looking at, well, now I want to retire and I just want to sell it and I want to get premium dollar. There is a disconnect here. As a buyer, I buy home services businesses. As a buyer, I'm not paying a premium for a company that is based on how hard the owner is working. So if the owner is involved in the business, I generally walk away because I'm not in home services. I don't know how to do it. I know how to run businesses and grow businesses.
Yeah.
I'm not here to buy a business that I now need to all of a sudden go be having a J-O-B because I have multiple others. Okay, so buyers are paying for that reliable cash flow, that business that is not founder dependent. Talk to me a little bit about how consistent revenue, the right marketing strategy, what we've been talking about in AI and operations, how this all has to flow together in the business to make it actually scalable and or saleable.
Yeah, so the biggest thing from my perspective, and I've had a few people contact us about buying our home service company, is basically you need to have reviews. You need to have people who will say that you're worth having at their home. That's number one, a good reputation, a good brand. Number two, you mentioned it, you need to have a leadership team that's not the owner, that someone that we can transition with, and that team stays and can keep the company afloat without having to have the person who casts the vision also be in the trucks. Things of that nature. So you got to be able to work out of those things. And then for me, in my opinion, SOPs and processes that are built out are if you don't have that, you don't really have anything. Now, the reality is most investors want to put their own processes that they've seen in their other companies work, but they want to know that you have something that and that your team can build a structure or build off of a structure that already exists.
Well, let me ask you the next question, because we are in this like rapidly evolving tech evolution. We've got AI, we've got robotics, we've got quantum, we've got all these other things, which we talk about a lot on the show, by the way, because I'm heavily involved in tech, so I'm not knocking tech. But what do you think is driving so many investors and buyers to have an interest in home services?
I think it's mostly the cash flow element of it, and the fact that you have growth and you have the ability to grow a company fairly easily, but at the end of the day, you have cash coming in the door and cash paying bills, and it's not a constant 30, 60, 90 day for most companies unless they're commercial. Most home service space companies are very much cash dependent, and it's a rotation of cash, and if you're rotating in more than you're rotating out, then you have extra cash flow. You can take dividends or anything like that in quarters as opposed to yearly or anything of that nature.
So now let's get to the where all of this intersects.
Let's okay? do it.
So I'm a business owner. I'm ready to retire. I'm going to go hire you for marketing and get all of this new revenue into my business because I want to sell the business. Okay? And I'm going to sell it in 6 to 12 months, hopefully. All right. So talk to me about if I get that huge revenue bump, is that impressive? Is that going to help my valuation? Or is it really hiding a weaker business? Like, what should buyers examine when they look at a company that they're here, they're here, they're here, then all of a sudden their leads go like this? What should they be thinking?
Yeah, I think for the most part, buyers are not overly interested in the last, 365 days. They're more interested, let me rephrase that, 365 days of growth. They're probably more interested on the net side of what have we been able to trim? What have we been able to make more efficient using technology or whatever that may be, as opposed to, hey, my revenue shot through the roof, but the reality is I still don't have all the processes right, so my net is still just terrible. So to me, that's the thing that if you're looking to sell, you should really focus on honing in, making your business excellent, and then continuing to scale or sell either way would work from that point.
Well, let me ask you the next question, because we have a tremendous amount of people now who are looking at buying their first business. I have a lot of people who are thinking about buying a first business or getting into entrepreneurship in that arena who watch the show. And if they're looking at, okay, well, home services, everybody's got a home, everybody needs plumbing. Oh, we had an electrical storm, everybody needs electricians. We all can read the news. We know that those are in need, in desire sort of scenarios, right? And I want to buy my first business. What should I be looking at when I'm thinking about a home service company? And where's the like dirty laundry hiding?
So the number one thing you should look at is book of business, customer base that already exists. And now for us, we the company we recently walked into, it was a company that had 6,000 customer base, but they only had about 200 people that were on a membership. And so you only really count the people on a membership whenever you're going, hey, this is reoccurring business, because it actually is reoccurring business. Outside of that, they have the ability to call anybody and everybody else they want to. And those people do too, but they're already paying you money. They want to call you. So the real thing is membership. And then, as I mentioned earlier, reviews. Do they have a good brand? Do they have a good business model? Are you going to get into a whirlwind of having to fix everybody else's problems or their previous problems that they had as they ran the business in some sort of way of, hey, this is a warranty call or things like that, and you have no way of fixing that, but the previous owner promised that we would do it.
Got it. Let me ask you, okay, so I love action steps. I'm a coach. I'm a consultant. I can't help it. I like to make sure they have something they can take away. For anybody who's running a home service business who's watching today, what is the one thing that they need to look at and or fix in order to make them exitable, even if they don't plan to exit? Because let's face it, folks, you may not think you're going to exit, but what, like, crazy things happen. You might need to be pulled away for some reason and have to come out of your business. So we should always be exit ready. But what is the one thing, based off of everything we talked about today, or maybe even something that we didn't cover, that you want everyone watching to think about, look at, if they're going to have an exitable business?
Yeah, the number one thing, and I hit it a while ago, you have to have somebody who's running the business that's not you. Most investors, most buyers, they don't want a business, or they're not going to give you top dollar for a business if you're the one who has to do every single thing in the business that makes it function. Outside of that, the second thing is you want to make sure that you're focused on growing your presence in your community, because you need someone to sell to. They're going to want people to sell to.
Absolutely. So Kyle, you've been really awesome today. It's been great to have this conversation, to dive into your marketing expertise in the AI space. So for our viewers, if they'd like to learn more or follow what you're doing or reach out, how can they reach out to you?
Yeah, so unfortunately, I would say you can go to our website.
But they're irrelevant, right?
They are, but you can go to our website and go to sogoodteam.com. We have a button, real easy button, book a free strategy session, or you can run a free AI visibility check if you want to know what your company's looking like on AI. And it explains everything that you would need to know to get a hold of the company in general. My email directly, if I can give that, is that okay?
You can.
Kyle@sogoodteam.com.
Thank you for that. It's been really fun.
I've had a good time.
I probably have one last question for you, but folks, like, the immediate action was really clear. Choose the one responsibility in your company as a founder or an entrepreneur that depends entirely on you. Document it fully, every step in the process. Measure it and start transferring it today, not tomorrow, not next week, but today. Because as you do that, you reduce that founder dependence, which makes your business more scalable, more steady, and able to be sold if and when that does happen. So Kyle, we've talked about a lot of things today. We have very brief. Give me like the one thing, the one takeaway that maybe you didn't get to talk about today, or the one thing that you want everybody to leave and say, oh God, yeah, Kyle nailed it. That's exactly right.
My biggest thing, number one thing, is you need to take your first step. And that's probably, we do something called a motivational moment in our company. And the whole goal in that is always to encourage our staff to take the first step. Sometimes that's away from our company, but in general, take the first step in what you need to do to make your company what you want it to be. Because at the end of the day, if it's not what you want it to be, then why are you doing it?
And that, my friends, is a mic drop moment. Thank you so much for your expertise and for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And you, yes, you, unfortunately, all good things do come to an end, including this show, but I want to encourage you to really reflect back. We've talked about everything from marketing, sales, operations, enterprise value, AI, and I want to just hit that more leads doesn't mean that you're going to have more profit. AI doesn't automatically produce that leverage that you're looking for. More revenue doesn't necessarily fix the holes in your business. Fix the operational holes in your business. Fix the capacity, then fix the sales conversions, then pour fuel on the fire with marketing so that you can grow sustainably instead of inverse and have a house of cards ready to fall. That's your action step for the day. You take that with me. Start today, not tomorrow, not next week. And the good news is we will be here same station, same time, same station next week. Until then, win today, win this week, and I'll see you next time.